PowerPoint that I ran across while I was doing some research to put my own PowerPoint together. I would love to give credit to the person that made this PowerPoint. I don't know who made it. I found it on the archives of York College. I think it was put together back in about 1995 or something like that. And lo and behold, as I started looking at this more and more, these folks stole my outline. So I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm just going to plagiarize their work and try to give credit where I can. So things have been going along. We have Martin W. Stone, Thomas and Alexander Campbell, James O'Kelly. They're all beginning to move in the direction of restoring Christianity as it was practiced by the first century Christians. And then in the 1860s, 1850s really, it all starts to fall apart. And the question is, what happened? Why did we divide? Well, the issues that caused churches to divide or congregations to pull apart from each other, it wasn't so much division within congregations as it was division between congregations, had to do with instrumental music, the American Christian Missionary Society, or you might say church cooperation in a more general sense, and whether or not we were going to have professional ministers. Now, the professional ministers question wasn't as serious in terms of dividing between congregations as the other two were, but it was nevertheless one that was beginning to be felt. Ed Harrell talks about this, and he says part of this was the sociological differences that existed between churches in the North, where people were generally speaking pretty well off, and churches in the rural South, where people were not. There's a lot of poverty in the rural South. The other thing that enters into this that was kind of a part of the missionary society is the whole question of slavery. Is the church going to support slavery or not? There were some unspoken issues, according to the folks that put this together, the regional political differences between the North and the South, urban culture versus rural culture, urban in the North, rural in the South, wealth in the North, poverty in the South, and all of this is magnified by the coming of the Civil War. The groups of churches that typically supported secession, you see on my right as I look at this slide, you have the Presbyterians, the Southern Baptists, the Methodist Episcopal Church, and the Episcopal Church in the Confederate States. Now, the groups that supported the North in terms of fighting against the South were the Presbyterians, the Presbyterian Conference of the USA, not the Presbyterian Conference of the Confederate States, the American Baptist Association, as opposed to the Southern Baptist Association. Then you had the Methodist Episcopal Church and the Episcopal Church in the USA. Churches of Christ, the groups that we've been talking about, are not immune from the issues that surrounded slavery. Campbell himself was a moderate as far as slavery was concerned. There were basically three groups in the U.S. that could be identified by their stance on slavery. There were those in the far north, generally speaking, who argued that slavery was a moral question, and you could not be a Christian and own or support slaves. There was the group in the South that said it wasn't a moral question, that you could be a Christian, and that didn't prohibit owning slaves. And then there was the group kind of in the middle, the border states generally, that said that Christians didn't have a moral responsibility regarding slavery, but they probably had a physical responsibility. So you had the three groups, and it typically wasn't the group in the far South that caused the division or that fought about this so vociferously. It was the border states and the northern states that fought about it. And the war kind of forced the issue. Hardy Butler was an evangelist in Kansas. He was an outspoken abolitionist. He comes from the far north. And remember what's happening. You have the Kansas territories that are opening up, and there's a lot of question about whether those territories are going to be admitted to the Union as slave states or as free states. Then you had James Shannon. He's from the South, and he is pro-slavery. Now, he actually thought that nature, the Constitution, the Bible itself, all approved of slavery. He's not in that great big middle group. He was actually a supporter of slavery. Now, here comes the American Christian Missionary Society. The American Christian Missionary Society was formed in Cincinnati, Ohio, in October of 1859. It was an effort to find a way for Christians to support the preaching of the gospel both here and abroad. And it was a recognition that to send an evangelist to some place like Jerusalem, which was the first place that they sent an evangelist, you had to have more than one local congregation involved. Now, some were opposed to the American Christian Missionary Society because when it was formed, it charged dues for you to be a part of it. For a church to be a member of the American Christian Missionary Society, they had to pay annual dues. Now, this is not unlike something that we've already seen with the Christian Association of Washington, where individuals had to pay dues to be a part of that. And some people were opposed to the idea that there could exist a religious organization that charged you dues. Campbell is the first president of the American Christian Missionary Society. Even though early on in the Christian Baptist, which was his first newspaper, first journal that he published, and he kept that going for about 6 years, he argued vociferously against any organization other than the local church that was formed for the purpose of spreading the gospel. His argument was that it it robbed the local church of the glory that it was supposed to have in God's plan. So he's violently opposed to any kind of society, any kind of organization outside of the local church that's going to do what the local church does. Now, that's a little surprising to me, given his father's background in the Christian Association of Washington. Because remember, they formed that society. They did not want it to be a church. They eventually turned it into a church. It eventually became the Brush Run Church, and we talked a little bit about that. But in its original formulation, it was not intended to be a church. Now, I think it may be that Thomas and Alexander decided that the Christian Association of Washington should not exist, that it should instead be a church. And that may be why they caused the Christian Association of Washington to transform from being a society to being what became the Brush Run Church. You had some other people that were influential or growing in influence about this time. One was Tolbert Fanning. Now, Tolbert Fanning is born in 1810 in Tennessee, raised in Alabama. He's baptized at an early age, ascended the University of Nashville, and he married Charlotte Fall. Charlotte Fall had a good bit of money. Her family had a good bit of money. 1844, he started a journal that he called the Christian Review. 1845, he started Franklin College. Well, the Christian Review ran into financial problems, and so it only lasted a short time. But in 1855, he started a new journal, the Gospel Advocate. Now, the Gospel Advocate is still around. It's been sold to different editors, but the Gospel Advocate was Tolbert Fanning, started in 1855. He opposed the American Christian Missionary Society. In 1859, he spoke at the assembly where the American Christian Missionary Society was formed in Cincinnati, Ohio. Nevertheless, the American Christian Missionary Society comes into being. The first evangelist that they hired he's a doctor. And I have the letter that he wrote offering his services as a missionary to go to Jerusalem. It's really interesting to read, but you see something in that letter that's deeply troubling to me. He's offering his services to the American Christian Missionary Society, but he says he wants to be useful to the church. So I think something has happened, and there's confusion in the minds of some people over whether the American Christian Missionary Society, this group of people that got together for the purpose of hiring preachers, sending them overseas, or sending them to places in the U.S. where they didn't have preachers, and distributing Bibles. That was their first effort, was to just purchase and distribute Bibles. Anyway, first guy they hire is James T. Barclay. Now, he's got a bit of a problem. James Barclay owned slaves. Most of his slaves had been inherited from his father. But he did himself purchase at least one. So he's a missionary that's sent by the society to Jerusalem, 1861 through 1851 through 1854, and a second tour, 1858 through 1862. But when the missionary society decides to send him, they're disturbed by the fact that he owns slaves. Okay. Next missionary that they send out is Alexander Cross. Alexander Cross goes to Liberia. I don't know if you're familiar with Liberia, but the nation of Liberia was established largely to give American slaves a place to go. They could be freed if they went to Liberia. It was established largely by people in the north. Well, he's going to Liberia. As you can guess, Alexander Cross is totally opposed to the idea of slavery. He is a former slave. He lived in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And he went to Liberia in 1853. He dies in 1854. Next missionary that they send out is J.O. Beardsley. Now, they only sent, to the best of my knowledge, three missionaries overseas prior to the Civil War. They sent Dr. Barclay, they sent Cross, and they sent Beardsley. He goes to Jamaica. Beardsley is also anti-slavery. So what you have happening is, in the northern states, there are about 1,200 congregations. In the southern states, there are about 800 congregations. Some of that was just due to population centers. Most of the population centers were in the north. And when you have population centers, you have more people, and so you get more congregations in the north. Fewer congregations in the south. And about this time, you start to see the rise of a pacifist movement within the church. This is J.W. McGarvey. McGarvey said, and he's a well-known preacher, publisher, wrote a book on the fourfold gospel that many of you would be familiar with. He said, "I would rather 10,000 times be killed for refusing to fight than to fall in battle or to come home victorious with the blood of my brethren on my hands." So he argues you can't fight. McGarvey is in that middle group, the border states. He's not going to support the North. He's not going to support the South. He's in the pacifist group. And you have all of these underlying kinds of things that are going on that are impacting the church. Now, they can't have a whole lot of impact on a local congregation because typically a local congregation is made up of people who basically share the same philosophy. It could be that slavery is okay if you're in the Deep South. Could be that slavery isn't a moral issue, but I wouldn't want to own slaves. It could be if you're in the far north, slavery is an anathema. You can't be a Christian and own a slave. So, alongside that, you have the pacifist movement. Now, the American Christian Missionary Society comes along, 1861. And the American Christian Missionary Society brings together people from the North, the South, and the border states. And you can imagine the fight that they had over the question of slavery. In 1861, the American Christian Missionary Society passed a resolution in their annual meeting to support the Union. They said, and I have a copy of the proceedings of the American Christian Missionary Society in 1861. This was a bitter battle. This resolution was introduced. A lot of people tried to keep them from voting on this resolution. But they ultimately decided to vote, and they ultimately passed the resolution. It said, resolved that we deeply sympathize with the loyal and patriotic in our country in the present effort to sustain the government of the United States against the terrorists in the southern states. Now, you can imagine what's going to happen in the South. They considered themselves a part of the American Christian Missionary Society. They were dues-paying members, but then they're insulted. Tolbert Fanning, he wrote this in the pages of his first paper. How can the servants of the Lord of this section, he's talking about the South, ever strike hands with the men who now seek their own life's blood? And you have to remember, the South, in many ways, didn't view this as the Civil War. They viewed it as a war of Northern aggression. This is what the resolution that they passed actually says, resolved. We unqualifiedly declare our allegiance to the United States government and repudiate as false and slanderous any statements to the contrary. That we tender our sympathies to our brave and noble soldiers in the field who are defending us from the attempts of armed traitors to overthrow our government, and also to those who are bereaved and rendered desolate by the ravages of war. So they have passed a resolution that says, if you supported secession, you are an armed traitor. Now, I can argue that perhaps slavery ought to be considered a biblical matter, but whether you choose to secede from the Union is not. They made it a matter of Christian fellowship. Onto the scene comes David Lipscomb. David Lipscomb is a brilliant writer. He stole one of my outlines back in 1900. He's born in 1831. He is a student of Tolbert Fanning. And he opposed Christians going to war. He's like McGarvey. He says you cannot fight against your Christian brother. So see, you've got the North, you've got the South, and you got the pacifists kind of in the middle. Now, I grew up in Kentucky. I come from a family where some of my relatives fought for the North, some fought for the South, and some were of the pacifist group. So I know how terribly dividing this can be. Lipscomb demanded on the pages of the journal that Tolbert Fanning was publishing that the American Christian Missionary Society repent of its evil, calling the Southern states armed traitors. This is what he wrote in the Gospel Advocate. Now, it turns out that he bought the Advocate from Tolbert Fanning. And this is why he says he decided to continue the publication of the Gospel Advocate. Not a single paper known to us that Southern people could read without having their feelings wounded by political insinuations and slurs existed. So he started the Advocate. It was a religious journal, but he started it because what was happening in the North was an insult to people in the South. Well, you also had influential journals that were begun in the North. The most influential journal that was begun in the North is the Christian Standard. The Christian Standard is edited by Isaac Arendt, and it champions post-war support of the Union. It began in 1866, and one of the people that was instrumental in starting the Christian Standard in the North, member of the church, would later become president of the United States, James A. Garfield. So, in the North, you have the Christian Standard, the journal that is widely, widely circulated. Isaac Arendt is the editor. And churches in the North tended to call themselves the Christian Church. Now, it wasn't a matter of division at that point. It was just that was kind of the name that was favored in the North. Not to say that everyone in the North was called a Christian church. In the South, on the other hand, you had the influential journal, which was the Gospel Advocate. Remember, the Gospel Advocate is run by David Lipscomb. And in the South, churches were generally known as the Church of Christ. Again, it wasn't really a name as much as it was just the designation that was generally favored in the South. Well, those aren't the only papers that were being published, or only journals that were being published. There was the Octographic Review. It was also published. The Octographic Review came from the West and tended to be more in line with the Christian Standard, but didn't really go quite as far as the Christian Standard did. There were other papers in the South, but these were the two real influential newspapers that were started in the North and the South. And the Gospel Advocate gives way to the Gospel Guardian, and those two papers or two journals are very closely related. Again, remember, most of the Christians at this time are in the North. That's where most of the population is. So that's not surprising. The other thing that you have to remember that's kind of going on at about the same time is this movement that we've been talking about, the Restoration Movement, at that time was the sixth largest religious group in the United States. They have been just going huckley buck since they were started. And remember how it got started. It wasn't just one person that started it. It was kind of a group of people who started moving in the same direction. They didn't all know each other. Barton W. Stone didn't even know Thomas Campbell and Alexander Campbell until later on in his ministry, when they eventually did get together and they said, you know, we pretty much agree on everything. We ought to be fighting together. And it happened. Well, 1906, in the religious census, so the federal government conducts a religious census every 10 years. Just like they do a census of all the population of the United States, the federal government also collects a religious census. Many people don't even know that, but a man by the name of S.N.D. North. Now, he is the director of the Religious Census of the United States, and he came to the conclusion that what had been listed as the Stone Campbell movement in the religious census was beginning to show signs of fracturing. So he contacted David Lipscomb at that time. Lipscomb's paper is the most influential paper in the country. He contacts David Lipscomb, the Gospel Advocate editor, and David Lipscomb agreed. The movement has begun to fracture. And David Lipscomb suggested in the religious census of 1906 that the Church of Christ and the Disciples of Christ should be listed as separate organizations, separate bodies, separate groups, however you want to define that. Disciples of Christ in the North, Christian churches, Church of Christ in the South. Once it divided, the religious census 1906, the conclusion was that in the North, in the Christian church, remember, the disciples of Christ, okay, there were 982,701 members. In the South, the churches of Christ, there were 159,658 members. So by a ratio of almost 5 to 1, the movement that we've been talking about split into two wings. It was partly brought about by slavery, by the question of slavery. Slavery exacerbated some differences that were going to become apparent anyway, but it brought them to a head with the Civil War. The Civil War was a bitter war. It pitted families against each other. I can't imagine how bad it was. ...86% of the disciples' churches are in the North and in the border states. The border states are the ones in green on this map: Kentucky, Missouri, Maryland, Delaware. The northern states are in blue, and as you can see, Kansas was beginning to be aligned with the northern states, an anti-slavery state. And remember, when they tried to figure out who they were going to send over to Kansas to preach, that was one of the problems that they had, figuring out what they were going to do. 14% of the disciples' churches are in the South. So it's not as if you have the Mason-Dixon line, and north of the Mason-Dixon line you have disciples, and south of the Mason-Dixon line you have churches of Christ. But for the most part, that's the way that it went. The churches of Christ, 64% of them are in the South, the gray states. 19% are in the border states. They were stronger in the border states than the disciples were. But the disciples, no matter where they're compared, typically have the numerical and statistical advantage, just because they're much bigger. 17% of them are in the North. So again, it's not as if you have the Mason-Dixon line, and if you're north of it, you're in the Disciples Church. If you're south of it, you're in the Church of Christ. That's not it. But largely that's the case. So this is the distribution of what we find after 1906. The first great division that we encounter in this movement. So that finishes it. Anybody have any thoughts, comments, questions?
I was raised in Abilene, Dean, and I can remember going to a white congregation one time.
Yeah, in the South, particularly. You had white churches and black churches. I don't think you had as much of that in the North as you did in the South. You have to remember, here in Oregon, we are basically people who came from border state areas. If you're familiar with Western Oregon University, it was established by the Disciples of Christ originally. And if you go to the cemetery up in, now, why can't I remember where Western Oregon is? What city is it in? It's not Philomath.
Monmouth.
Monmouth. If you go to the cemetery up there, you can read a lot of the gravestones that have a person's name the year he died and says member of the Disciples of Christ. So it's really interesting.
I remember when I was young, I was born in Dallas and raised around in through there, and we used to go to the black congregations. I've never seen as much enthusiasm. We used to enjoy that so much because they were really zealous in everything that they did, and it was just amazing.
Yep. So
I
was born and raised around Dallas and Abilene. My grandmother lived in Pioneer, Texas, mother and us, dad didn't go, but we always went to the revivals and everything that, you know, and the little kids were even really into it, you know, they were singing and just, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Carolyn?
Oh, I was asking Jimmy where it was that she had gone.
I was too little to really know because I was probably 8 or 9 or 10, up to 12 maybe, but I don't remember. I just remember going and how exciting it was.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you had racially divided churches. That's not the way to say it. You typically had racially homogeneous churches in the South. In the North, you had churches that were a lot more heterogeneous. You would have African Americans, you would have Irish, you would have whites, you would have different groups. And I think that tendency to develop racially homogeneous churches I think that was a dangerous tendency. I think we lost something when we allowed that to happen.
Dean, I didn't know that the division was that far back. I thought that one of the biggest difference between the Christian congregations and the Church of Christ was musical instruments. That division, or that didn't happen until later?
Yeah, that happened after the Civil War, but it had become readily apparent by 1906. Generally speaking, the Disciples of Christ used an instrument and the Church of Christ didn't. J.W. McGarvey has a really famous statement. He debated a lot of people on the instrument. J.W. McGarvey's father was J.K. Pendleton. Pendleton supported his father-in-law was J.K. Pendleton. Pendleton supported the introduction of the instrument into the church where J.W. McGarvey was preaching, and McGarvey had a fit, and he said, for those of you who think that the instrument adds something to singing, you're about as spiritual and intuitive as those people who think that a cowbell adds something to a concert. He was McGarvey had a way with words, and he did not mince words.
My mother-in-law was a member of the Christian church, and she said that where she went was just like where we went there in Ashland. And she said that she was baptized. She was immersed. That's why she was baptized, but they had musical instruments. But she said, but that she held to until she died that there was nothing wrong with musical instruments.
Right. Yep. The question of baptism was never a question. That remained constant. But it was the same for both groups. Baptism for the remission of sins. Interesting observation, Ann. I think it was McGarvey. I'm not sure whether it was McGarvey or one of the other preachers that I was reading about. He said he had no objection to instruments in a church building as long as they were never seen or heard.
There's nothing more beautiful than an a cappella singing, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And there are a lot of people that felt like that was the case. But the instrument became a divisive matter. And it was brutally divisive. They just like slavery was brutally divisive within congregations.